This is an example of speech.
Welcome back to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heatwave of an ongoing conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Producer Pete. You can contact me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis. And your host is Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is W-Y-R-D. This episode, Charles interviews congressional candidate from California's 6th District, Ben Emmerd, to tell us what he thinks. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think.
The Old Voice Network decision signed with a shake and a smirk. Centralized states can turn a blind eye.
Welcome, those listeners. We have Ben Emmerd with us. Why don't you introduce yourself, Ben?
Hello, everyone. My name's Ben. I'm a 30-year-old young man, and I'm running for the House of Representatives in the 6th District of California, which is Sacramento.
Okay. Well, what do you think distinguishes you from your opponent in broad terms?
In broad terms. Okay. Well, I don't think you can find two more different people, not necessarily politically. She is somewhat liberal. You know, she's a Democrat, of course, but I would consider her to be a corporate Democrat. She's 74 years old. She's been in office for 15 years now. She took over after her husband passed away in office. He was there for 25 years. And I thank them both for their service, but I think that not nearly enough for the working people of Sacramento and the United States. She's represented primarily corporations and the wealthy, and it's not surprising given that she served as a corporate lobbyist in Washington, D.C., while her husband was the congressperson from Sacramento. Myself, I'm definitely not in favor of corporations like she is. I favor policies like Medicare for All, which she doesn't support, and she's a millionaire, whereas I have $300,000 of student debt, mostly from law school, but some from college still. And I think some other things that really distinguish the two of us are she is somebody who works primarily behind the scenes. She doesn't take strong stances on most issues, really. And that's not what I'm about. I'm a very passionate person. When I believe in something, I support it fully, and I throw my rather loud voice behind it.
Okay. Well, you mentioned healthcare. What do you think about private insurance?
I think that many of the problems that we're experiencing currently with our healthcare system, you know, there are more than 27 million people in this country that are uninsured, the wealthiest country in the history of the entire earth. And we've got 27 million people who don't have health coverage. Private insurance is not incentivized to cover these people because they can't make a profit off of them. And thus they leave them out in the cold without medical treatment, without doctor's visits, without the medications that they need. So I think that the system of private insurance that we have in this country is failing our people. And not only that, besides the 27 million people without insurance, there are an additional, 50 million people that are underinsured who don't want to go and see a doctor, even when they're sick, because they don't want to have to pay for the copay or the premiums. I think that it's a system that's failed us, and it should be replaced with a single-payer system wherein everybody in this country regardless of how much money they have, is able to receive the medical care that they need.
Well, that's pretty succinctly stated.
Thank you.
Let's move into some legislation. For instance, let's talk Green New Deal.
Okay.
What kind of legislative incentives do you think the federal government could provide to state and local governments to, rehabilitate and adapt to climate change?
Subsidization, baby. I think the federal government, which has billions and billions of dollars at its disposal, should be providing funds to state governments to transition away from fossil fuels, from coal, from even natural gas, which still produces greenhouse gas emissions, to a system where we are entirely free of fossil fuels by 2030. That's the deadline that scientists have set for us. If we do not hit that deadline, the consequences will be dire. This includes, us transitioning more to public transportation as opposed to automobiles. Over here in California, automobiles are everywhere. This is the biggest car market in the entire world. And while we are transitioning somewhat to electric vehicles, that's not enough. We need to encourage people to take fast, cheap, and easy public transportation by creating systems like high-speed rail, local rail systems to get through cities, and even shutting down central areas within cities to vehicles and create walking and public transportation only area. The Green New Deal, there are various iterations of it. Bernie Sanders came out with a $16 trillion plan to tackle it. Elizabeth Warren came out with one for $3 trillion. I don't know exactly where the dollars need to be. I'd say probably more than $3 trillion, given the scope of the problem that we're dealing with and the fact that if we do not handle climate change in the allotted time, then humanity as a whole potentially faces extinction. So,
right, it seems kind of pointless to refer to resources when so much is on the line.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, as part of the Green New Deal, what do you think about nuclear power? You don't mention it on your website.
I don't mention it on my website. It's not my preferred method of generating energy. I would prefer solar, wind, even geothermal. I understand that if we are to make 2030, perhaps nuclear is something that we need to do, but the waste that is produced from a nuclear power plant sticks with us for, hundreds of thousands?
5,000 years.
Yeah. A lot of time. And if that got into our groundwater or our oceans, we saw what happened with Fukushima when the nuclear power plant there was hit by a tidal wave that polluted our oceans. And, we don't want to be ingesting radioactive material, whether it's through our water or our food. So maybe it's better than boiling our entire planet in just a few decades, but really I don't think that it is the best method for generating energy.
Let's talk about California 6th in relation to climate change. What steps do you think the Sacramento area could do to, adapt?
Sacramento is uniquely vulnerable to extreme flooding. It's the second most vulnerable city in the entire United States, behind only New Orleans, which sits below sea level and is surrounded by dikes and levees. Sacramento is similar in that it's got two rivers, the American and Sacramento River, that meet just south of the city. And we have the Sierra Nevada watershed just less than 100 miles away. And given the rising temperatures and the increased potential for rainfall, an extreme weather event could occur as a result of climate change, wherein after a heavy snow, a warm tropical storm could come in, melt our snowpack, and overwhelm our water storage systems, leading to massive flooding, not only in Sacramento, but across the entire California Central Valley. So what we need to do is we need to really invest in our infrastructure to protect the city from flooding, invest in water storage, not necessarily dams. We've got a lot of aquifer capacity, underground storage that we should be working on. And this would not only protect Sacramento from an extreme flooding event, but it would help the farmers of California get access to fresh water, which has been such a problem for them over the past decade.
Sure. What other issues do you think the people of Sacramento are thinking about in this election cycle?
I think a lot of people are thinking about criminal justice reform. People are seeing what our justice system is producing, what it calls justice, and we realize that it's actually injustice. The fact that for drug-related offenses, African Americans and Latinos are incarcerated at a much higher level than white people, and that, you know, our jails are overcrowded, and we need a total revamp of the criminal justice system, of our sentencing guidelines. I think that a reduction in sentencing pretty much across the board, regardless of the crime, should be enacted. I know countries like Norway, even for something like murder, the maximum sentence is about 20 years. And I understand that there are people who are mentally ill, deranged, that aren't capable of living safely amongst the general populace, and those people should be accounted for, but not necessarily in a prison. I think that we need to treat our incarcerated population with humanity, to reinstate their voting rights, and to absolutely get rid of for-profit private prisons. They need to be abolished entirely. California has recently done that with a new law that will be enacted, I think, January 1st, but that needs to be done nationwide. The fact that our federal government is paying private companies to detain children and families at the border is a travesty and a grave injustice. So criminal justice reform, definitely.
Okay. Would you support getting rid of cash bail?
Oh, 100%. Okay. I can't believe I forgot to say that. Cash bail is a punishment for being poor. And any rich person can find the cash to pay their bail, regardless of the crime that they committed. But, you know, the working class is unable to pay even for small crimes. And then we've got our bail lenders that prey upon the poor, and it needs to end.
Awesome. Let's see. Federal convictions, I guess that's not really... you did mention reducing bail and sentencing, but convictions. What do you think about diverting people away from the criminal justice system, like even at the federal level?
Are you referring to something like restorative justice?
Mm-hmm. Those kind of measures, like diversion and other restorative measures. Like, how long should somebody be a felon, for instance?
I'm not really sure about that. I haven't formed an opinion on how long a person should be a felon. I don't think that they should have a blight upon their record for their entire lives, certainly, but that's something that I would have to give more thought to.
Okay. Well, let's see. Well, let's flip it on its head. How about criminal prosecutions for corporations? Like, you know, measures now, under the Sherman Antitrust Act.
If corporations are people, then they should be able to be prosecuted, right?
Well, sure, but even, like, up until the SNL crisis in the 80s, like, executives would still face some measure of criminal prosecution for malfeasance and fraud, which, you know, hasn't been enforced. What do you think we could do to bring back that kind of enforcement?
Well, I think first and foremost, appointing an attorney general who will go after white-collar crime would go a long ways.
Sure.
I think that the laws in order to do so are on the books. It's just been something that most people, most administrations aren't willing to do. And maybe that's because white-collar criminals typically have a lot of resources to fight cases, or because white-collar criminals tend to be white. They don't face the justice that they deserve.
All right. Well, that's a very succinct answer. And while we're talking about companies, what do you think about unions? I know you have some thoughts about unions on your website.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of unions. I think that the wealth disparity that we see between the richest in this country and the poorest in this country is primarily generated by the destruction of unions in this country. We're at a point now where only 12% of working people are members of unions, which is down incredibly from the numbers that used to exist back in the 50s, 60s, even the 70s, before Republicans primarily targeted unions and removed people's collective bargaining power. And if we want to close the wealth gap, I think that unions are the number one thing that we need to do.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously that involves the National Labor Relations Board, but what do you think about mandatory union representation for large companies with more than 100 employees?
That's something that I haven't given a lot of thought to either, but I'm open to the idea.
All right. Let me take a look at my notes. I'm sure we still have a lot to go over. What about immigration? I'm not sure you have very much on your... Like, how much of Sacramento is an immigrant population?
Sacramento is one of the most diverse cities in the entire nation. We've got a huge immigrant population. Waves of immigrants have come in over the decades. And I think that it's an issue that we need to address as quickly as possible. I have a personal story relating to immigrating to the United States. My grandfather came to this country when he was 18 years old. He was born in Italy, just outside of Naples. And he saw the fighting in World War II happening there. And, you know, there was bombing going around in around his little farm. And he's got a lot of stories about what happened during the war, but after the war, he joined the Italian Navy, and he traveled to the United States, where he met my grandmother, fell in love with her, and married her. And he tells a story to anybody who will spare him a minute to listen, but he came to this country with nothing. He had a suitcase, and he borrowed $2 from some family friends in New York. And with that, he was able to build a life for himself in this country, to have a beautiful family, to have a wonderful career, and to generate a significant amount of wealth. And his story is the American dream. And I think that too much today, we are closing people off from the possibility of the American dream. Not only American people, but people who want to come to this country to make a better life for themselves. And in order to do that, we need to enable people to come to America, to work in America, and to live the American dream. So long as they ascribe to our values of the freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, and religion, I think that anybody in the world can be an American.
All right. Obviously our immigration system is currently a mess.
Yeah.
Kind of on purpose, but what do you think we could do to try to alleviate the plight of, for instance, foreign workers trying to come to the United States and people in the United States who were trying to get those foreign workers?
Well, I think that the H-1B visa program needs to be expanded. I think that we need to stop criminalizing the people who cross the border illegally. It used to be just a civil offense, but now under the Trump administration, it's become a criminal offense. They've recategorized it. And through doing that, they allow our criminal justice system to imprison these people, separate them from their children, and treat them as criminals. And I think that the system was working just fine before, where it was categorized as a civil offense. They were released on their own recognizance and given a court date to come in and make their case for why they should be here in the United States. So decriminalizing border crossing is one of the first things, and granting more visas would be another.
I've heard one option suggested, like establishing in like our State Department embassies in Central and South America, like facilities to help process temporary visas in an expedited fashion. What do you think of that? Obviously, it would require like refunding the State Department.
Yeah, what did they face? A budget cut of about 30% under Rex Tillerson and now Mike Pompeo?
Yeah, they'd hate civil servants, apparently.
I think they just hate the federal government in general. It seems like the Trump administration is an attempt to shrink the federal government and make it as ineffective as possible. But absolutely, I think that a program that expedites the temporary visa process would be an asset not only to people trying to come to this country to make a better life for themselves, but for the American economy as a whole. So, yes, I support that.
Okay. Well, it may seem flippant, but my producer wanted to make sure I asked you whether or not you'd commit to not having any kind of relationships with your subordinates while in office. It shouldn't have to be said, but, you know, this is where we are today.
Are you referring to relationships of a sexual nature with my subordinates?
Personal relationships with subordinates, like the Katie Porter or Katie Hill Winston.
Yeah, absolutely. I will not have any kind of inappropriate relations with any of my subordinates.
It seems ridiculous, but what can you do? We live in ridiculous times.
The day and age that we live in, concerns like that are valid, and I think that more candidates should be respecting those boundaries, because absolutely it's inappropriate. I mean, if we look at the relationship between Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, I don't blame Monica Lewinsky, but I do definitely blame Bill Clinton. That was an egregious abuse of power. The relationship there, where he is the president of the United States taking advantage of a White House intern, is 100% wrong. And I promise that nothing like that will happen with me.
Bold statement, but let's hope you can live up to it. I mentioned it before, so let's talk about foreign policy. You don't mention it on your website, so can you kind of offer what some of your general guidelines would be? Like, what is America's role in the world, and how should international citizens, like, think about their relationship with America?
I think that America should be to use Reagan's words, which I don't really like to do ever, but America should be the shining city on the hill, the example that everybody in the world can look to see this is how we respect human rights. This is how we should treat other people. And unfortunately, we have not lived up to those ideals, hardly ever in our life. You know, we say that the freedom of speech and freedom of conscience are so important, but these are rights that we afford almost exclusively to Americans. You know, we've had involvement abroad through the CIA, through our military, overthrowing governments, assassinating people, and that absolutely needs to end. America should be an ally to the world and should not be meddling in other people's affairs for the benefit of only the United States. We need to have reciprocal relationships with other countries where we help to grow a more stable and a safer world. And that includes ending our foreign wars and perhaps bringing a lot of our troops home. We need to be concerned about creating a power vacuum wherein Russia or China can step in. And we absolutely need to support our allies. But that doesn't necessarily mean using military force. There are so many other avenues that we can explore through diplomacy, through integrating our economies, that will help our friends abroad. We don't need to be bombing everyone.
Sure. What would you say to, obviously American imperialism is a part of our way of life, but what would you say to, for instance, a potential colleague across the aisle who says those kind of cuts to military spending would destroy our way of life, in their, to use some of their rhetoric?
I'd say it's nonsense.
Sure.
What is it, $720 billion a year on our military right now? And we're bombing in dozens of countries. We've got a military presence across the world. It's absolutely unnecessary. We don't need to be the world's police in order to maintain our standard of living. We can reallocate those funds to places like education, healthcare, and foreign aid that would be far more beneficial to not only our people, but the people of other countries.
Okay. What are your thoughts about the UN, which could be, you know, an apt platform for a lot of these ideas? It's been marginalized in the past decade, but...
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of potential, and it currently acts as a venue for nations to air their concerns, but it's a pretty toothless organization. And the fact that the United States is withholding funding currently from the UN and nearly bringing it to its knees only demonstrates how weak it has become over the past decade. So I think that we need to revamp the UN to maybe get rid of the veto power of the United States and China and Russia particularly, and make it a more democratic institution that actually has some real power to affect change in the world.
All right. Let me ask you, Ben, have you ever traveled abroad?
I have indeed, yeah.
Okay, where have you been, if you don't mind my asking?
I have family in Italy, so I've traveled there numerous times. I speak Italian, and I've enjoyed spending time with them, learning about Italian culture. I've traveled to a few other European nations, but I guess the most significant experience that I've had abroad was through law school, where I went to New Delhi, India, and worked with a non-governmental organization addressing childhood sexual violence, which is a rampant problem. Through my experience there, I learned that more than 50% of children, male and female alike, experience severe sexual trauma prior to the age of 18, and that the justice system there is totally incapable of delivering justice to these people. So that was a really eye-opening experience. It was valuable for me to learn about that issue, to learn how different nations across the world deal with that problem through the justice system, through restorative justice, and to see how a country like India, with over a billion people, how the people there live. And for many of them, they don't live well. They live in poverty, and I think that their government and governments across the world fail those people.
Okay, well, in the idea of reciprocal relationships that you brought up earlier, what do you think the federal government in particular should do to adjust their relationships with countries that are less than democratic, that don't have particularly good criminal justice systems, that are actively abusing or, if not outright, killing their people?
Well, I think that we should probably freeze relations with any dictators or governments that are killing their own people. I think that Syria is a good example of that. You know, we've sanctioned Bashar al-Assad, and we have aligned the international community, besides obviously Russia and Iran, against what's been going on there. Our recent surrender there and betrayal of the Kurds is another travesty. But I think that we need to use a carrot and stick approach with nations that are not living up to our standards of taking care of their people, respecting human rights, delivering justice to their people. We can allocate foreign aid funds to help build infrastructure in these countries, whether that's democratic infrastructure, criminal justice infrastructure, or literal infrastructure. But we also need to use sanctions, like we do against Syria, against North Korea, to try and persuade these foreign governments not to treat their people so poorly.
Hmm. All right, well, that's a pretty succinct answer.
Thank you.
Well, it's about half an hour. Let's take it back to local politics again. In the past decade, from an 8% vacancy rate in 2009 to like just under 3% rental vacancy rate in Sacramento, how do you think, or what do you think about providing more housing for you know, the people of California. What do you think that you could be doing to help that situation?
Well, at the federal level, there has been a ban on new construction of public housing. And I think that that needs to be undone. Public housing has provided so much for so many people, for people who can't afford the exorbitant and rising rent prices, particularly here in Sacramento. I think Sacramento has one of the highest growing rent rates in the entire country. Mostly that's people fleeing from the costs of Los Angeles and San Francisco that don't necessarily want to leave California, but we need to enact rent control. Probably nationally. We've done a good job here in Sacramento. We've got a new rent control bill here, and the state of California has a new rent control bill. But across the country, that needs to be enacted. And building new federal housing and enacting rent control, I think, will do a lot to help alleviate those concerns. But also, we need to incentivize contractors to build low-cost housing, low-income housing.
Okay. Well, what about land trusts? Do you think the federal government should step in and impose, like, you know, low-cost housing land trusts on cities with large homeless populations?
That's an issue that I'm going to have to learn more about. I don't really know enough about that to speak on it.
Okay. Well, I guess let's broaden this out a little bit. Where do you stand on that capitalism-social divide that's kind of splitting the left right now?
That's a good question. I identify, my campaign manager tells me that I am a social democrat, but my lodestar, if I can use Mike Pence's term, would be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and she, of course, is a democratic socialist. I think that she is doing some of the best work across the entire country right now. So whether I call myself a social democrat or a democratic socialist, I support primarily the policies that Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stand for.
Okay, so perhaps not exactly seizing corporations.
As in seizing the means of production?
Right, like literally confiscating equity, but...
No, I think that we can revamp and re-strengthen the middle class and working class without necessarily seizing the means of production.
Okay. Well, how about public utilities?
Oh, like, boy.
For instance, PG&E.
Yeah, PG&E is a pretty hot-button issue right now, and just about everybody here in Northern California is pretty pissed off at them right now. So I like to hold up the example of SMUD, which is the Sacramento utility. And it was formerly a part of PG&E, but is now a nonprofit, customer-owned company. And it does a much better job of providing energy, transitioning to renewable energy, and maintaining its network in a safe and functioning way. Whereas PG&E obviously has been conducting numerous blackouts over the past month and has sparked dozens of fires over the past few years, killing 86 people in Paradise just last year, almost a year ago now. So I support making PG&E either a publicly owned utility or making it a nonprofit corporation, because they've been spending far too much money paying bonuses to their executives and dividends to their shareholders when they should have been reinvesting in their own network to transition to the challenges of climate change.
Okay.
So that we don't have blackouts and fires like we currently do.
Sure. And with like such an egregious corporate actor like PG&E, like testing that socialism line, at what point do their actions go beyond the pale that they need to be
seized?
Into
criminal negligence, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I think when they don't clear the brush under their power lines, and when they allow an extreme weather event to cause a devastating fire that kills 86 people, they should absolutely be held not only fiscally liable, but potentially criminally liable as well.
Awesome. Well, I guess I have just one more question for you before I open it up to your side. But, Ben, I need to ask, what's your pathway to 65,000 votes?
65,000 votes is, a pretty low bar. If I want to win this thing, I'm going to need closer to 200,000 votes.
Well, I mean, that's roughly how much I calculated you would need to get ahead in the primary.
Ah, to get ahead in the primary. Well, absolutely winning the left. Sacramento is one of the most Democratic cities in the entire country. It's well over 75% Democratic now, trending higher given what's going on with the federal government and the collapse of the Republican Party here in California. So in order to get those 65,000 votes, the number that you put it at, I need to convince people that I am going to be fighting for working people in Sacramento, as opposed to the political elite, the corporate class, as the incumbent currently does. And from the people that I've talked to through canvassing, through campaigning, they're very open to my message. People are ready for change here in Sacramento, and I think across the country as a whole. 65,000, while it sounds like a lot of people, is not that many. Talking to people as often as I can and spreading my message through social media will get me a long way.
All right. Well, as I said, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
There's nothing I can think of.
Oh, I forgot. Weapons. Or gun reform.
Yeah. I personally own a shotgun. It was given to me by my grandfather before he passed away, and I grew up hunting, although I don't hunt anymore. I think that it's really not for me. I think that killing for sport is kind of a moral failing. I understand people who do it to eat, but really that's not very necessary in our world anymore. I enjoy shooting at a gun range, you know, trap shooting or something like that. But when it comes to firearms on American streets, I think that the federal government particularly needs to be doing a lot more to protect our American citizens. And that includes an assault weapons ban. That includes a licensing program for people who want to own firearms. And it includes closing loopholes that currently exist, such as the gun show loophole, where people can buy weapons without a background check. I think that universal background checks absolutely need to happen. It almost prevented a recent shooting that happened down in Texas, but the individual who committed that atrocious act was able to purchase a firearm from a friend instead, and then go on to kill a lot of people. So gun reform absolutely needs to happen. I think that examples like New Zealand and Australia are perfect. You know, they banned assault weapons. I think they even banned handguns. I don't think that would fly here in the United States. Maybe that's something to aspire to. But a voluntary gun buyback program would also go a long way to getting these weapons of mass death off of our streets.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll close this off. What are the big three issues that we need to be looking at?
Universal health care, climate change, and criminal justice reform.
All right. Well, it sounds like you have some pretty authoritative points on that, so good luck in the election.
Thank you very much, John.
Days are sunny, some days are rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!
These yours?
No, I...
Your mother said she saw these hot takes of yours on Twitter.
When a guy has...
Has what?
Look, Dad, they aren't mine.
Where'd you get these hot takes from?
Dad!
Answer me! Who taught you how to do this stuff?
You, alright? Learned it by listening to you.
Parents with hot takes have children with hot takes.